In today's episode, Falcon Heavy gets super renewable, Tesla makes some money, and A Universe in a Box gets released online. Let's get ludicrous. Hi, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's going to make our future totally crazy today. Sure. Yeah, I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel, and with me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut. And of course, I'm from all those things that are on the internet. And then we have the other guy down here, Ben.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics. And I think I am the only one not out of it right now. Joe busted an all-nighter, and Tim, are you surviving the polar vortex? Did the polar vortex bring the cold?
Yes, the polar is -9 Fahrenheit. So what is that? -3,000 or something Celsius? You know, it's
approximately. Close. Yeah,
approximately. It's very bad here, and the Midwest is like, it's we had a shutdown basically, a mandatory, just everything. Yeah, it's crazy.
Where's that
it's
global warming tomorrow. When you need it?
Oh. and we both go,
That one again.
Great. Well, unfortunately, I think there are people that are like, see, global warming doesn't exist.
I'm just upset that, the president ruined that joke because I used to love that joke. Right? Because I actually thought it was a joke. Like I'm not sure he does. Yeah. But point being... I hope you survive.
Take that out of context. Yeah, you know, just the worst part is the cold transferred into a cold, like a head cold. So if I sound different, that's why. Sorry, guys.
Well, and my mom
happened
always
to
tell
sinus
me,
warming.
I would always hear, like, don't go outside, you're going to catch a cold because it's cold. And so now we have evidence of that. So
it's true. Anecdotal is all get out, but it's true. It's the truth. The cold came. My cold came.
Well, we have a lot to talk about, so why don't we hop right into it? What do we want to talk about first, guys? Tesla, Falcon Heavy, or Universe in a Box?
Well, Ben, you've got nothing to talk about. I mean, nothing happened just yesterday that's worth discussing.
All right. I'm just going to jump right into it then. If you guys are watching on YouTube, you will see what I'm talking about. If you are listening online, I'll do my best to explain the fantastically beautiful and amazing charts that we are looking at. And so the idea yesterday was Tesla's earnings call for Q4 of 2018 and the full year kind of results. And they did well. They had their second straight quarter of profitability. First time in history. Yep. Worth a clap there. First time in history that they've done such a thing. However, the profitability was down 50% from the previous quarter. But typically, you don't look at things quarter on quarter. You look at them year over year. But because Tesla is in such a hyper growth mode and every year is like a monster new year, I like to look at them sequentially. So kudos to the team. They did a great job. Revenue was up almost 6%, 5.8%. Gross profit was down, but not by much. Cost of goods sold went up, which I don't like. SG&A, which is the cost of making sales, went down by 9%, which is great because that means that they're becoming more efficient in their sales process. And R&D went up. So R&D going up, to me, means that they're innovating again. And so lots of fun stuff going on there. So
show the R&D chart? I want to see.
Let me click on that. And I'll put a link to...
Did they actually provide these numbers?
Yeah, these are public numbers. There's actually a ton more. These are the ones that I like to focus on. There's a whole financial statements with every detail and a gazillion websites with these. I like to just distill it down into kind of my way of looking at it here. But so R&D dropped last quarter by 9% in Q3 of 2018. And then it jumped back up 1.5%. So, and the idea in my head with R&D, the reason I even care about it is because, well, first off, it affects profitability, but I think it's a good thing generally with a company like Tesla that's based on the pace of innovation is really their what they're able to – like how they're able to win. So the more they're investing here to me sounds like they're putting the pedal to the metal and trying to advance what they do. So when I see a drop, I'm like, ooh, I don't like that. So it's back up. But things are going well. Elon dropped a ton of bombshells here. But before we move on, any questions about these numbers, guys?
One more time, remind what SG&A, again, that's kind of like how much it costs to get the vehicle or something into someone's hands, the product in someone's hands. Is that right?
No, actually, would that be cost of goods sold? Because you're talking about like the delivery. This is like the cost of making a sale. So things that should go in here, like your sales staff, like people that are working at the stores and leases and stuff like that, like the cost of making a sale. The cost of goods sold would be like the cost of like producing a thing you know, the steel you bought or whatever. The SG&A is essentially like the softer side of that, where it's like, okay, you had to have coordinators, and you know, we had to hire 5 extra people to handle Joe's invoice because he's so difficult, right? Things like that. So this going down is a good thing. It means that they're becoming more efficient, right? They're able to do sales with less money, or make sales with less money. So
can you real quick, while we're on the R&D, it looks like it's the third highest for those that aren't able to watch. It looks like it's the third highest total amount of maybe third or second, or third, or it might be tied with that 2017. There's a big spike in R&D, and 2018 Q. Yeah, just read those numbers at the top three, just so we kind of have reference of like.
Yeah, so the most money Tesla has ever spent in R&D, 2018 Q2, $386 million, and then it looks like 2018 Q1 and 2017 Q2 were right around $367-369 million. And then here we are at $356 million. So it's in the top 5 quarters that they've spent on R&D, which is interesting. I'm curious what's going to happen in Q1 since they let go of a good percentage of people recently with their layoff. If this is going to actually drop, but you know, it depends on where exactly those people fit into kind of the balance sheet. So we'll see. Yeah.
Did they happen to say on the call like where those R&D money, R&D dollars are going into? Is it like the new AI chip or?
No, they didn't specify exactly what. Mm-hmm. They did talk a lot about other things that were not just in the financial statement. So, you know, but nothing that tied this R&D spend directly to any of those. One thing, probably the most interesting for me, was the Model Y, I'm sorry, the Model S and X news, which I don't know if you guys heard about that, but so there's this cool platform called Say, where retail investors like you and me can actually submit questions for the team and use our shares that we own as kind of voting power. And so one of the questions that got asked was about upgrading the Model S and X to the 2170 battery cells.
Yeah, I heard him talk about this.
Yeah, and the answer was no. The answer was flat out no.
It really surprises me.
I was shocked by that, yeah. So part of the reasoning me and a few other people were kind of thinking about is that so the question kind of had two parts. It was like, when are you going to upgrade it, and what increase do you expect in range? Mm-hmm. And he said, we have no plans of upgrading it, and I can't comment on future product developments. So, yeah.
Since when?
I mean, it's funny. I think that was his. I would love to see a video of Elon answering, because you know he's just like smirking and giggling half the time. Like, I think when the analysts were asking the calls, like he just started laughing at one time. I think someone said, you know, Waymo is valued at $175 billion. And he was just like busted out laughing. Like, what? Like, yeah. Tesla's like, what, 80 billion or something? I don't know. But, yeah, so his answer was very kind of short and, like, open-ended, or, like, didn't answer, you know, saying, we're not going to do 2170 cells, and I can't comment on any other product developments. To me, that left the door open for, they're going to do something. It won't be the 2170 cell, but it's going to be awesome. Or maybe that's just me putting...
Also, like, they're working on a new battery.
That we don't know any. He didn't allude to any specific thing, but he definitely left the door open to, like, it will get a bigger range, but we don't know how, right? He didn't say, oh, it's going to remain the same. He didn't like, you know, put a stop on it and say, no, this is as good as it's going to get. Right. He left it open. So I'm very curious to see what advancements are going to happen to SNX, because those are still the flagship vehicles. Right. Those are obviously way more expensive, way more bells and whistles. Those are the ones that you know, that they want to sell the most of, essentially.
Well, And when I was watching your pre-stream, basically, with you and Galileo, and you guys were kind of talking a little bit about how, you know, Tesla changed just this last week, I think, from stating, like, the battery pack size and all that stuff to just saying, like, long range or whatever range plus extended range, and you're basically paying 8% for $8,000, like 8% of range, you spend $8,000 on. I wouldn't be surprised if that's their way, that when they get to the point where they're ready to upgrade the battery packs, you know, if in the future now they don't have to say what size of battery pack it is, but they can be like, here, you can get 400 mile range, or I guess like say 300 mile range, or spend 10 grand more and you can get 400 mile range. You know, this is their way of making it so they never quite said what it is, you know,
right?
Like they're not locking themselves in,
right? Yeah, so I'm looking at the website here. If you guys are listening in, if you go onto Tesla.com and go to buy a Model S or X, it now just has it listed, and then there's a checkbox here for an extended range. So this was the same range as the 100D before. So that's kind of where that goes out. So 310. This must be. I don't know what this is because I don't think the 75D gets 310 miles on AP estimation.
It didn't. It was only like 270, I think.
Yeah, it might even be less than that.
Or 265 or something.
So I don't even know what the base Model S is now. I'd have to go back and look and see, or maybe someone can leave us a comment here.
Well, software limited, isn't it?
So you think that they're producing a 100 kilowatt hour pack for this car?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
What if it's
I didn't know what the size was, but it seems like I read something about that they were software limiting it so that it would be more, you know, they wouldn't have to make different battery packs. They would just make the same thing.
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to pay more for it, you could.
Yeah, maybe. That would be a really interesting kind of calculation to figure out on their end. Like, is it cheaper to put the batteries in there even if they're not used versus not put them in there?
Right.
Because batteries are expensive. It's the most, you know, expensive part of the whole vehicle. So they also add a lot of weight. You know, I guess that would be a funny thing. If you just got both these cars and put them on a scale, if they weighed the same, you would know that they had the same pack. Yeah, it's interesting. So, but the thing you're alluding to, Tim, is that essentially they're decoupling what is physically in the car versus what the car can do. So if they have some massive breakthrough or something, a solid-state battery or something like that, they will not have to disclose that essentially,
mm-hmm.
right? The car will just have a different capability. So I like that.
You know what's curious is okay, just hypothetical, totally making up stuff now. But notice that the standard range version there showed 310 miles, which is, I mean, that's significant. Like that'd be, you know, 90 kilowatt hour battery pack basically, or the old 90D or whatever is capable of about 310 or whatever. What if this is a new cell? And it's only like half of the battery pack, you know, because they're like, it's such a limited run, they can barely manufacture these, you know, these new cells or whatever. So like, all right, well, I don't know, let's just try them out for now on the like normal range.
Mm.
And then, you know, so they're only producing half the amount of cells, and then soon they'll release an extended range that's double,
yeah.
you know, or whatever, or 75% or whatever, and it's this new cell. And we won't know until people start getting their hands on these not extended range, and like all of a sudden they plug them in and they can charge super fast or something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, it has the... Because otherwise, that's a weird thing. 8% for $8,000 is weird. From 310 to 335 miles for 8 grand.
Yeah. So that's, what, 25-mile difference for 8 grand? That's a pretty expensive.
That's insane. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because I remember when you looked at the Model 3, so the base one was, what, 35? And then the... What was the long range originally?
Like $8,000 or $9,000.
Yeah, it was $8,000 or $9,000 difference for like 90 miles though, right?
Yeah.
90 mm-hmm. mile different. And I remember people were like, that's not worth it. And I did the math on them. I'm like, this is the best deal you can possibly get, actually. Like yeah. dollar mm-hmm. for mile of range, there is not a better deal at any vehicle out there. So mm-hmm. you're wrong. Like that is a good mm-hmm. deal. You may not want it or need it, but you know.
Right.
Yeah. That's crazy. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
So what else was on the call?
Yeah, okay. So other big deals, big announcements or takeaways.
Sorry,
I had.
Joe, did I interrupt you, Joe? Were you going to say something?
No, I was just thinking that I actually like the idea that they might be working on some kind of solid state battery or some kind of future battery tech, because I was always thinking that, you know, because other people are working on that, and if that nut gets cracked and they get kind of superseded by some better technology, and they're kind of like, they got this anchor of the batteries that they've been developing and built all the infrastructure around creating it and stuff, they might start to fall behind. So it's intriguing to me that they might be working on something like that.
I'm sure they are. Anyway. I'm sure they are. I don't know about solid state exactly, but I would not be shocked if there's a very secretive department that basically is just exploring wild ideas. Sure. Yeah. Because that's
Skunkworks.
Yeah. I mean, that's the modus operandi of Tesla, right, is to innovate faster than anyone else, right? They open source their patents. You can basically copy everything they do, but you're not going to be successful because they're just, you know, pushing so much harder than everyone else. So. Yeah, so Elon, cool. Something wasn't a big surprise, but I felt was a good takeaway is that when he opened up with the very first thing he said was his biggest priority is improving service in the United States. So great, because I know a lot of people have been talking about that. What he talked about was basically ramping up the mobile service side where, you know, people come out to your house or your work and just fix your car on the spot. Lots of stuff like that, as well as, this was a cool feature, I'm curious what you guys think about this, a preemptive system that will call a tow truck and get a loaner vehicle on its way if you're in an accident or if there's a flat tire or any of those things. Essentially, like, boom, the car detects some type of emergency thing, and it just automatically called. They're automatically on the way. It's already happening. I'm curious, what do you guys think about that?
Sounds like a big it sounds like something they could have done earlier when there were fewer drivers, and now that they're scaling up, that seems kind of ambitious, but
it's one of those, like, I don't know, how many times is that going to be a false alarm? Like, how many times is it going to be like, oh, we thought there was a problem, but really it's not a big deal, or whatever. Yeah. You know, you had a tire pressure sensor go bad or something. It just seems
you're just changing tires, how about that?
And you're saving someone, I don't know, what, a couple, like, maybe make it on the app, or I don't know if it needs to auto-dial for sure. Like, maybe just make it, would you like service? Yes, you know, or something. Yeah. I think the idea of it, like, you're going to have a tow truck on the way before you even stop. Like, that just seems a little like, okay, whoa, we can go from, like, this being a 6-minute thing to, like, a 3-minute thing. That's nice, but not, like, a instantaneous thing. I don't know. Just
like
a little
click to confirm or something.
Yeah.
Right, and if you don't confirm, we're going to do it anyway because maybe you're unconscious or something. Maybe it was, something like that. Yeah, interesting. They also said that they'll be stocking parts at the service centers, all the common parts that they need. I think that, if and when becomes true, will be like a major win for everybody, because that is one of the biggest complaints is waiting on parts, essentially. And when asked later, will that actually add a lot to CapEx, and, you know, will they be spending a lot of money on this? He said, no, we're just kind of really dumb about how we do it right now, and we stock all the parts at the factory. So I hope all those things are true and that all happens, because improving the service level seems to be probably the biggest factor right now, I think, in kind of keeping that.
Well, clearly there were so many people talking about it. They got the message.
Yeah. Okay, and Model Y. Are you guys going to order Model Y?
Maybe.
I just got my car, man. I'm just settling into it. I'm just getting my butt groove going.
Well, so, but it's, I mean, we'd maybe be considering another car next year, a second car.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's in time, that might work out.
Yeah. So Model Y, according to Elon, the default location to make it is Gigafactory 1. And that's great to hear him actually confirm that. We had a leaked document a while ago stating that same thing. He also kind of made it sound like they might be looking at other spaces, but nothing was confirmed, and they're basically moving towards making it a Gigafactory 1. Makes a lot of sense. The Model Y, he said, will have 3/4 in common with the Model 3, which means that they will be able to take everything they learned from the production of it, et cetera, all the production hell lessons, and apply them to the Model Y. So hopefully that means this thing will roll out much faster. He also mentioned that they've completed engineering and design, meaning whenever they unveil it, it will essentially be the actual car. There may be a few more tweaks. Like, you know, people don't really think about it, but when the Model 3 was unveiled, if you go look at that at that unveiling, there are a lot of little things there that are did not make it into the production cars. They're pretty close, but there were a lot of like door handles and wheels and this and that, things that just didn't actually end up happening. So
sometimes I like going back and watching that video again just to kind of spot all the little things, like the steering wheel's a little different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go back and like...
Model X was a huge one. When you see the reveal of the Model X,
yeah,
it looks so different compared to... Because it had the old front grille that like just looks so weird on an X, you know? And then thank God they killed that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Model Y going along smoothly. He did not talk about a reveal date. However, he did say that they could possibly unveil the pickup truck this summer. And we still don't have a date for the Model Y event, which he replied to my tweet a while ago that it would be in March and has stated that on other podcasts. So we don't know if it's going to be in March. I think most people still think that, but there's a little growing community of people that think it'll be pushed back. And if so, we could possibly have the Model Y unveiling and the pickup truck unveiling at the same time, which
I fully expect that
would be nuts, I think, because I'm also expecting a Model S and X update. You know, I don't want to say refresh. I don't know if we're going to see a big change at all, but something new there, I think, is probably due. So.
So what if they could potentially just drop a huge, like a big mic drop midsummer, because if they push up the truck, it sounds like the truck, you know, most people weren't thinking we're going to see it until 2020.
Yeah.
But if they push it up, they release the truck, the Model Y, and refresh S and X. I mean, they could just go.
That'd be monster.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
The thing with the S and X is you would almost have to be like, hey, here's this new whatever. Let's just say 400 mile range. Let's say exactly the same car, just different battery, and so way more range. I would want, like if I'm in that situation, I'm like, hey, yes, I want it. Here's my order. I want that thing in like a few weeks. I'm not going to wait 2 years for that, right? Cause especially if it's basically the same car. So it'd be interesting to see. And they have so much experience building it. It's just one of those things. So that'd be interesting to see, or it will be interesting to see, you know, whenever we get that. Yeah. All right, so also the other big announcement was Deepak Ahuja is retiring. He is the chief financial officer. He was there from 2008 to 2015. He took them public in the very early days. His first, I think, month on the job, I remember someone can look this up, but I remember him saying that they had to like lay off 30% of the staff because it was the 2008 kind of recession. That's also when they bought the factory in Fremont, and they got a steal on it, essentially, because of that same situation. So it was kind of a very good and bad. But yeah, he's been kind of the rock star CEO, or I don't know how you want to say it, but you know, instrumental in Tesla's success. They've now had two profitable quarters in a row, and you know, they're doing well. So now we have Zach Kirkhorn. That's coming in. People are calling him the millennial CFO. Very well educated, been with Tesla 9 years, you know, very good, you know,
so he knows how to deal with debt.
Yeah, exactly. Seemingly capable guy, still has, you know, he did go to Harvard Business School, so I'm sure he does have quite a big student loan to pay off.
Harvard.
And on the call, there was a funny little back and forth between him and Elon that was like, you didn't need to go do that. That was a waste of time. So I just kind of like to hear him saying that. But you know, that led the stock down. Basically, when you have your CFO that's been so, you know, instrumental in the success of the company, just going to happen. So the stock is down. I think it's down. It dropped like 3 to 5% overnight. I don't know where it's at now, but overall, you know, I thought, other than a lot of the kind of boring bonehead questions that you always get, it was pretty exciting.
Yay. So nothing scary, nothing bad, nothing great, just kind of normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Boring is good in this context, right? It was one of those things, you know, and they put out their letter that explains all this, kind of highlights a lot of the, I mean, yeah, if you're into finance stuff, you can go dig into this. If you're not, you know, hopefully I was able to summarize what was interesting about it for you right there.
Yeah. Crazy.
We're both sleep addled already, and it's like, yeah, let's read that financial letter.
Let's just go deep into the There we go.
Well, so speaking of Tesla, are we ready to move on? Speaking of Tesla, we've got a really good Why Don't They Just?
Dun, dun, dun,
Joe, can you read this? Why don't you why don't they just?
Let's hear it.
Are you asking me to read it?
Yeah, Joe, you do it.
Oh. Okay, so Chris, Lord Eskimo, at Lord underscore Eskimo on Twitter asked, why don't they just integrate the Tesla solar roof into, all caps, the roof of your cars as an option? It would probably be very slow, but it would also be so convenient to have constant, infinite recharge. And this is something I've seen a million times myself, so let's dig into that.
This is a classic why don't they just. This is a really, really good why don't they just. Thanks for asking that one, Chris. Yeah. Why don't they just do that, guys?
Well,
let's start with Joe. Let's start go Joe, me, and then Ben, because I think Ben has probably the most insight on it. Joe?
Well, because we all know the sun's going to burn out eventually, and so
and then it'll be a
waste
of point?
Money.
Yeah.
So Joe,
and I parked my car in a garage, so it doesn't do anything. My understanding of it, if you want a serious answer, I do that every once in a while. It's just that it doesn't. In order to actually recharge a 75 kilowatt or larger battery, you would have to have a pretty large solar array for it to actually make that much of a difference. It seems like I read you only get like 2 or 3 miles a day if you parked it outside or something like that. That's my take on it.
Yeah, that's my understanding exactly as well. Like I think the Karma Fisker Karma, however, whatever those two words are, put them in the right order. That car had a solar roof and hood, I think, even, and all it could run was like the radio and maybe like heated seats or something, like very, very, very small amount of electrical charge. And really, yeah, just the surface to the surface area isn't enough for the, you know, solar panels to do anything substantial. And especially, as great as, convenience and infinite recharge, yeah, it is infinite during the day on sunny days.
As long as you're not going anywhere.
As long as you're not going anywhere, exactly. All right, Ben, what's the main reason? What's the real killer?
All right, well, let's take a little trip back to history, memory lane here.
Cute.
This, if you're looking at the screen, we are looking at a Ford C-Max Energy.
Cool.
And this was unveiled. I have the other tab right there, so I have to go pull that up. Sorry. this was unveiled in 2014. I'll just read you the little quip about it. It's the C-Max Solar Energy Concept. It's a solar PV-powered vehicle to run electrically without depending on the electric grid for fuel. The Solar C-Max Energy Concept was unveiled in 2014 at CES in Las Vegas, and it was a collaborative project between Ford, SunPower Corp., and Georgia Institute of Technology. So, we've tried this, guys. As you mentioned, one of the Fisker things, and this, an actual production car from quite a while ago, had this technology built in. And it essentially would power your phone. It would help you charge your phone is where it basically about as much energy as it would generate. So, like you guys are saying, even if you quadrupled the efficiency rating of this, it still would take weeks to actually charge a vehicle. However, I think it is possible to achieve something like this, and I am working on an experiment as such. Basically the surface area of the vehicle is not big enough. I have seen a really interesting van life video. There's a guy out there named Dylan McGaster who does these amazing kind of documentaries about people that have these alternative living situations in vans or buses or whatever. And there was a family that actually converted an old VW bus and the pop-up roof part of it, they made that all solar panels. And I believe they used residential solar panels instead of automotive solar panels, which are like a very thin film. And those just had higher efficiency, whatever. And so I think they said 2 or 3 days they could completely recharge their electric VW bus. So I love this idea. The technology is just not even close to being feasible right now. But yeah, maybe down the road we have another way. I mean, if solar could capture, what, like 80, 90% of the energy that hits it, we might be able to get there. Or if you had things like supercapacitors and whatever graphene cells. Like, I think there's a number of advances that would have to really come together in order for this to be feasible. So, yeah it's a good one. I think it's a dream for a lot of folks, but, you know,
well, then,
we'll see.
And then just look at your costs. Like, you know, solar panels are pretty expensive. If you're to totally put a, you know, solar panel across any surface area of a car, you're looking at several grand for maybe 2 miles a day at this point. So that's, I think that's one of the biggest things is, like, it's just not happening right now, you know, as is. But yeah, future, it's a possibility in the future. I'm sure it's a kind of a holy grail thing that we'd all love to have.
So I know that there are people out there watching or listening to this and screaming into their phones or their car dashboards. So I'm just going to address this real quick. But there is a car that does this. It's called the Sono Motor Scion electric car. I don't know exactly how much juice they get out of their solar panels, but I think the hood.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The hood, maybe the roof. Anyway, it's pretty much covered by little PV cells. So this does exist, and there are people out there that are trying it. But we'll see if it actually, you know, becomes.
Yeah. And there's, of course, always race cars, too. Like, you know, there's.
Yeah, there you
there'll
go.
There'll be. Yeah, there we go. It's, yeah, interesting. I'm very curious what the claim you can get every day. That just seems like it's not going to be anywhere near endless mobility.
Yeah,
charges better using
Europe.
All solar. So maybe it'd be funny if they're like, you can recharge every day fully using solar. We have a 1 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah. It goes 13 miles on a charge.
But you can do it every day. Wait, there we go. What's that say up top? Or hang on. Right, what's this say? The battery has a range of 250 kilometers.
Okay.
Capacity of 35 kilowatt hours. Total 330 cells can generate a maximum of 1,200 watts with a 24% efficiency. So wait, 1,200 watts?
So that's 1.2 kilowatts.
Yeah, so 1.2 kilowatt hours. So it'd take 35 hours, basically, to charge.
If you had max sun for 35
hours
straight.
Which, 3 days.
Yeah. 3 days to charge.
There we go. There's the problem.
What is this? They put succulents inside the thing? Is this what?
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen that. It's weird. Yeah, that's how they... That's their air filter. It's an actual, like...
moss?
It's moss or...
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
How does it... The moss takes care... That's cool, but what?
Okay.
So you'd have to maintain this ecosystem in your car.
Right.
In order to be able to breathe.
Okay. That's
it's a neat idea. I'm not trying to crap on it, but that is kind of weird.
And also, don't forget, there are cars that can run 100% off solar. Ben, I need to steal your screen real quick.
Go for it. Let's see it.
This is the other one that, you know, most people... would probably consider for their personal use.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And of course, it's basically three bicycle wheels, the world's smallest cockpit. You're basically wearing a helmet. You're basically wearing this car. And then it just has a large wing of solar panels. And that's what it takes. This is what kind of like weight to, you know, surface area to blah, 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 you know, that you can actually drive a car with solar panels.
Right. So in order to do it, yeah, I guess that's where I was going with that. Like a typical car doesn't have the surface area needed.
Mm-hmm.
And even that thing, yeah, the whole thing weighs like, what, 200 pounds?
Right.
And it max speed is like 15 miles an hour or something, right?
Yep. And it's like crazy aerodynamic and no rolling resistance and all
so
that stuff.
I'm still a believer. This is an idea I've had for a while, and it'll take a few years to try to suss it out. But the Tesla Semi with... basically a trailer full of batteries with a tiny house on top of it with solar panels that just like almost like the one of the rovers, right? Like it just like I have a 85 solar panel field that comes out with my tiny house. So, you know, we can drive for 6,000 miles without stopping because we have this massive trailer full of batteries. We pull over and we're going to be there for a month or two, right? And the solar panels with a big enough array that you can... Like they have solar stuff that's like a film.
Stoplight it unfrills too and like just knocks over poles and stuff.
I don't know about that. But
and then you go under a bridge.
Yeah. But I think that there is some total Mad Max like real world DIY scenarios here, and I want to try to explore some of them because I think that'd be super fun. Maybe we'll get there. Yeah, maybe we will. So it's a good why don't they adjust, because I think it's actually not too crazy to imagine this happening. It's just a little bit.
It makes sense too.
It seems like an obvious thing at first glance, and then
dig
deeper.
Yeah, you start digging into it. You're like, ooh, okay, well, it's a lot harder than it sounds. That's a good one. So, Joe, tell me about the universe in a box.
The universe, verse, in a box, box.
Is it a subscription service from Amazon? Is this a new thing?
Sounds like it, doesn't it? No, so this was just something I thought I would share with our viewers in case we have any like citizen scientists out there, people who like to kind of go through cool data and be a part of the scientific world community thing. I can't talk. So there's a telescope in Hawaii. There's a lot of telescopes in Hawaii, but this one's called PanSTARRS. It's the Panoramic Survey Telescope and Rapid Response System, PanSTARRS. They just released, I think last week, 2 years worth of their data. It is a 1.6 petabyte dump of data that they have released online.
Good luck downloading that.
It is more than, yeah. It says 30,000 Wikipedias or 15 libraries of Congress worth of data from their stuff. So the PanSTARRS telescope, it's 1.8 meter telescope, 1.6 billion pixel camera. They also did a release back in 2016 that had 2 terabytes of data totally. This particular telescope, I'm just kind of reading from space.com here. It says PanSTARRS is tailored to find what astronomers call transient and variable objects. So you might have heard about the interstellar asteroid that they caught flying through our solar system called Oumuamua, which, of course, a lot of people have decided it's an alien spacecraft because, of course, it's aliens. this was the telescope that found it. And this was how they found it, was like finding these transient objects in the solar system. It kind of looks for movement and things that shouldn't be there. So they've put their entire data set online through the Space Telescope Science Institute, which stores NASA's optical and ultraviolet telescope data. I'm just kind of reading now. It's not like image files. You have to have some. We'll put the website in the notes and in the description of the video and stuff. But you can go and download their processing software, and there's some little instructions on how to do it. But if you want to, you can kind of be part of that, and you can use this to search for interesting stuff.
Aliens.
Out there in the universe.
Aliens.
Yeah, it's always aliens.
Always aliens. It's nuts. This is funny to me because, yeah, it's raw data, so you have to process it, like you said. And that's one of those things that I've heard flat earthers say a lot. Is like NASA says that they have to Photoshop their image. They'll tell you that they have to Photoshop their images. It's like, yeah, every image is raw. Like, you have to process every image ever. Like, just because some cameras have built-in like JPEG compressors and can make a tangible image right off the camera, doesn't mean it's not being processed in the same way. Like, just because it has to be processed off the camera doesn't mean it's now fake.
Well, Kim Kardashian has to be Photoshopped, so she doesn't really exist.
We're getting personal, Joe. She is a friend.
Sorry, Kim.
She's a friend?
Yeah, she's a friend.
I do not appreciate that. Where's the data? Okay, the first release. I'm trying to see this. Cosmic Wikipedia, Massive Digital Sky Survey. So is this binary data? I'm very curious. Because, like, when you store a photo or a video in a database, it's typically stored as binary, which obviously you can't read or do anything with. You have to have some kind of processing software to render that. Yeah. And that's how images, videos, everything kind of works in on the internet.
It's literally just, like, ones and zeros?
Essentially, they're called blobs. That's the original name, binary large objects. So it's like a special data type that you use when you're storing the data in a database. So if you were to, say, run a query against a database and say, hey, give me this image, the typical way that you do it now is actually you just have pointers, you just have references, like here's where that image lives and it's already processed, because processing the images on the fly takes a lot of time. And, you know, humans, we're very impatient. So I'm curious what this data set really is. It could just be metadata. Like, here is a dot with this Lumosity at this location, mm-hmm. blah, 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 in which case that would just be text. And that would be fairly easy to process. So how much did you say it was? 1.2 petabytes?
1.6 petabytes.
1.6, well, yeah. That's not a terribly...
1,600 terabytes.
Yeah, that's not a terribly large data set in the world of big data, but it's not, you know, small.
Consumer level, that's insane, though. I mean, do it, probably.
right, yeah. Like, putting it on your hard drive is going to be insane. But
somebody's going to be listening to this in 20 years and be like, I got a thumb drive with that much on it.
No, seriously.
Seriously. Like,
but, like, so, for example, when I was at Facebook, our data warehouse at the time had, like, 350 petabytes. And that was 2011, 2012.
Oh, so it's probably whatever's beyond that next, the next order of magnitude.
Exabytes. I don't know if they've actually got exabytes there yet, but it's probably 500 to 600 petabytes now. And Google, I think, has even more because they've been around way longer and store not just information about all of us, but all of everything on the web, right? So, yeah.
They know everything about everyone. That takes up a lot of data.
You know, that brings up an interesting point. Well, I don't know if we want to keep going. Tim, do you have any other thoughts on this here? I have another random topic.
I was just going to say on this topic, like, I think it's really cool when they, you know, NASA or, you know, scientific papers, when you can actually, like, download and help process images and help, like, comb through data as a, you know, there's, because as good as AI is and as good as, like, computers are at finding, like, patterns and stuff, they're still not very good at seeing, like, I don't know. There's something about the human brain can just recognize that stuff a lot. So there's a lot of studies and stuff, a lot of different things like this where it's like, hey, here's, we want you to look through and look for transiting stars or something, because a computer still just for some reason can't pick up on those little things like the human brain can. We can just fly through
them
on computers.
We're just pattern recognition machines.
Yeah.
Really is all our brains are.
The millions or, depending on who you ask, thousands of years of evolution. You know?
Yeah, I think it's cool when I think it's cool when that's the case, when we get to actually, like, take part in legitimate science. So
you're like, humans got one, and the AI and everything is like, oh, that's cute. They're cute.
Take that, AI. No, there's a another thing, and I probably shouldn't even say this because I can't remember the name of it. People out there are going to be screaming into their phones. But there's another thing similar to this where they're mapping. The connectome of mice brains, basically, so that they can figure out, you know, stuff. so they can figure out how our brains work and everything. But anyway, they've got, like, these, like, not MRIs, but sort of slices of mice brains. And what it is, like, you're like, following neurons through these slices of the brain. So you're, like, looking at one panel at a time, and it basically it's almost like a game. Like, they get people to – they try to gamify it and have people come in, and, like, it's kind of mindless, repetitive, whatever stuff. But is that a –
it looks like Princeton researchers crowdsource brain mapping with gamers, discover 6 new neuron types.
Yeah, what is the name of this thing? I forgot. Oh, iWire. That's it. Yeah, iWire. I knew I was in there somewhere. But anyway, yeah, you can see on the image right there, they're kind of mapping out these neurons and the connections, and but they're bringing other people in, bringing, if you want to call them citizen scientists, or just bored people that want to sit there and click on images to kind of help map this out. It's pretty interesting. But again, it's that whole pattern recognition thing that we're just so good at, and computers, you know, they're not quite there yet.
Well, it's
so nuts.
I would argue that we have different skill sets, and there are clearly things that computers can, like, the thing about pattern recognition with machine learning algorithms and stuff is that they can process petabytes of data in minutes, whereas a human, we could spend our entire lifetime and not get through it all. So I think, like, that's the thing. But then often what you do find are very, what we would call, erroneous results or matches, right? In my previous kind of full-time job as a data professional, we would build systems that would look through all of our company metrics, and whenever we had something that fell outside of what we call, it's a Bollinger band, it's like a rolling two standard deviations of some trend, of like a 6-week trend or whatever is appropriate, whenever a measure, an actual data point, fell outside of that was, like, notable. Right. If it fell inside of it, you're like, that's normal. So just whatever. Don't waste your time. So a data point would fall outside of two standard deviations and you'd go, ooh, what's going on? And then we would build algorithms to look for other metrics in our business that had similar patterns of volatility. right, to try to give us a clue as to like why or you know, something else that behaved similarly at the same time, was it related? And the machines were great at finding those things, but they were terrible at actually making the connection between them. Right. Yeah. Like you could see sales all of a sudden for a day were zero when normally they were in the thousands or something. Right. Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, crap, what happened? And then, you know, you could say, oh, here's a metric that reported similarly. It was like number of people that logged into their computers was zero. And you're like, oh, what the heck happened? Like, you know, it's like, oh, well, that was a holiday. Right. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, OK, well, those things aren't related because the website should still be doing sales. It was like the website was actually down was the answer. But it threw up all these other ideas of like things that looked similar but actually had no correlation.
Made
with
false
it.
Correlations.
Yeah. So they can parse through them very rapidly. And if you program them right, we give them kind of the right training data set, they can work incredibly well. But yeah, like often, you know, it's just not there yet. I know that there's this public perception of like AI is here. It's just like going to take over. Let's just lay down and let the machines kind of run over us. But in practice, it's not even near that, right? It's like, they're very good at some things, but then, yeah, like you're to your point, Joe, it still takes a human that understands, like in my careers, like the actual business and how it functions to make those correct, you know, correlations.
Well, and to go on the other end of the spectrum, have you ever seen how, like, I think it's just straight up chimpanzees, how they can recognize, you can flash on a screen 10 numbers, like, and have like 1, 2, like all over, like, you know, left, right, all over the screen, randomly places little blocks that say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? And a human can get to about 1, 2, 3, like, because this image is literally only there for about a half a second. And a human can, you know, recognize and try to, if you say, okay, flash that, all those random 10 numbers on the screen in random places, flash it on there for half a second, take it away, and say, okay, now point to where the squares to where the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 were. A human can only do like 1, 2, or 3 or whatever before they're like, I have no idea. And a chimp, it's unbelievable. They just have – it's just their brain is literally wired different and like really hurts my head watching them do this. But they flash it on.
I think I've seen the videos you're talking about.
Yeah, the chimp just goes boop, 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 boop. Like it's nothing. And you're just like, how is that physically – it's just weird that, you know, different brains are wired in different ways and there's still huge advantages to the human brain or, you know, anatomical brains compared to AI today.
Yeah, but just wired differently,
someday.
Right?
Yep. Yep. Oh, well,
wired.
Speaking of wired differently, you want to see
it didn't
this?
Work. Hey, Tim, you want to talk about the Falcon Heavy?
The Falcon Heavy's wired up a little bit different than the Falcon 9s because there's two Falcon 9s basically.
They just had some really big zip ties, right? And they're just going to.
Just giant zip ties. That's all they needed.
The giant WD-40 can and zip ties.
Hey, that's Starship, baby. Oh. So, Ben, you're hoping to go out to the second Falcon Heavy launch.
Yes, I'm hoping to take my son, the family, have a whole thing of it. He was in the Tesla referral program. We'll see.
Yep. We'll see if they follow through on that for you. But, it's starting to happen. Like, this is now you can start to actually pay attention. Before this, I would have said, like, don't worry about it. Really, because, you know, I've been saying, like, just wait. For a while, but really, because you've been, I think you reached out to me like last April or something, and that's when we first communicated, or June or something, and you're like, hey, do you have any idea when this might happen? I'm like,
yeah,
you're going to be waiting a little bit here, man, like, put those patience pants on.
They made it sound like it was going to happen last year, and obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And it was slated for that, but now we finally actually have permits coming through, so this is the first time we've actually had these properly. On with the federal government opening back up, they filed to actually have the launches of the next two Falcon Heavy missions. Because there's actually their Arabsat 6A, which will be the second launch, and then there's also going to be the STP-2 space test program too, which is kind of a smorgasbord of some other things. So we have two Falcon Heavy missions, and they're planning to reuse both of those side cores, like right off the bat, like literally. At this point, they're scheduled for 2 weeks away. They're planning to like literally land the cores, check them out, and go do it all again, like right away.
So this won't be two separate vehicles. This will be the same one.
Literally the exact same rocket flying right away again. Wow. But I'm guessing it won't be 2 weeks. But even if it's a month, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like that would be crazy. So we're seeing a lot of details out of this now, finally. So the cores, the two side cores are, I think, as I record this, I believe the second core, side core, is actually getting to Florida. So that's good. The center core, I don't really have a good gauge on that right now. I think it might be getting close to McGregor or something. So all three cores are physically manufactured. They're being tested. They're heading out to the Cape. That's a very, very good sign. One of the problems, though, now is we're facing DM-1, the first Dragon mission, is coming up. That's in the hangar right now. There's the HIF, the Horizontal Integration Facility there at 39A. And you can't really easily, you probably might be able to, but it's going to be really hard to fit all three cores of a Falcon Heavy and everything needed for DM-1 in the same hangar. So there's a little bit of rumors that they might have to wait on the center core or something until DM-1 goes off, which is currently scheduled. They're saying February 23rd, but really probably more like March 3rd, I think, is the date I'm hearing, or March 1st or something. So with that being said, these are looking at most likely, I believe March is the day that they're, March 7th, I think, was the day that I'm seeing for Falcon Heavy, but
wow.
I still expect it to get pushed back beyond that, because it'll have to be at least 2 weeks after DM-1. So I'm thinking like end of March, potentially early April for Falcon Heavy would be a reasonable guess at this point, because it is starting to happen. We actually are starting to see hardware. We're starting to see, you know, the FAA filings and all that stuff. So, yeah.
It's going to be a busy month, man.
It's, oh my gosh. The next, like, this year for spaceflight is going to be unbelievable. Between multiple Falcon Heavy launches, all the you know, commercial crew stuff between Boeing and SpaceX. SpaceX's abort test, Rocket Lab launching from the East Coast. That'll be by the end of the year. There's also going to be, oh my gosh, there's also going to be like Blue Origin flying people for the first time, Virgin Galactic hopefully flying people. Like, we're going from like a standstill of like not humans flying around or doing anything to everyone's flying humans all of a sudden in 2019.
Yeah, this is the like hockey stick growth, right?
It's like, this, yeah, it is. And then lastly, speaking of Falcon Heavy, one thing that's awesome, really, really, really cool, SpaceX shared another video of the fairing recovery attempts the other day, and watch this. This is so frustrating, but I love that they're showing us their failures, because how humbling is that, you know? But they're sending Mr. Steven, the fairing catcher. So look at this. By the way, people are going, why isn't he putting on the brakes? Why isn't he putting on the brakes? Stop, dude, stop! And what you're seeing is it literally touched the net. It literally went up, hit the net.
Oh, man. I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah, this just came out a few... Yeah, this just came out a few days ago. Very close. They're definitely practicing. But the exciting news here is that Mr. Steven, the boat, is heading out to the East Coast. And that's huge, because that means they're moving it beyond kind of the development phase. Look how close this is. Sorry, I'm rewatching it. If you're not watching on YouTube, I'm just replaying
it. I saw the one where it kind of fell before it got to it. I didn't see this one where it actually touched the net.
Yep, it actually touched the net. Got dragged off, and then they're getting so they'll have it. I mean, to me, this means the fact that it's going out to the East Coast means that they're done trying to really development, you know, or developing Mr. Steven. They're done kind of practicing trying to catch them, and they have enough confidence that maybe they'll start getting them now.
Yeah,
and it's a matter of like, are they going to be doing this for Falcon Heavy? How cool would that be if Falcon Heavy has, you know, the two side cores, the center core, and the fairings get caught? I mean, that would be unbelievable. But, of course, we still only have one fairing catcher, Mr. Steven, for now. So there's some speculation, like, are they going to build another? Do they have a system in place where they can lower the net and quickly stretch out another net and catch another one, even though they can't even catch one right now? Like, regardless, even if they recover half of a Falcon Heavy fairing, and then maybe the next half on the next flight, that would still be crazy.
I kind of feel like, sorry, there's a bug flying around me. I kind of feel like they master the landing, and everybody's kind of bored with that now. So they're like, we need something else to make it interesting.
Yeah,
you know. So let's try to catch the fairings. Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
let's tell them it's expensive. Yeah, let's just do that.
It's true. We're so programmed now that like we want something that we're like cheering for and like crossing our fingers about. Like, oh, are they gonna do it this time? Because now, yeah, landings are just like, yeah, what. Duh, of course they'll land it. What else is new, you know?
Right.
Tell them when they're going to do backflips.
It makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, I was imagining Sean White, you know, skating it like a half pipe there as it was coming down. It kind of fits perfectly.
Like I said, I want to ride that fairing. I don't care.
That would, yeah, that sounds kind of fun.
I'll ride the fairing.
That'll be at the SpaceX theme park that's going to open in 2 years. You know,
extreme.
You know what is interesting? This is a total side topic, but we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary, and I'm going to be doing a 1 year replay, like a watch party of Falcon Heavy. We're going to totally rebroadcast the live stream. I'm going to go over kind of what's changed since then, do an update on where Falcon Heavy is now, and you know, all this stuff, just kind of produce a little fun show next week, because I think February 6th is the anniversary, so a week from today.
Yeah, it was February, wasn't it?
Yep. Next week? I'm curious, though, those side boosters were supposed to go on display at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if on the one-year anniversary or something they unveil where or what they're doing with those. I'm just surprised we haven't seen them yet. You know, there's a lot of cores out there somewhere that can be going to be displayed somewhere, and I think they should be. I mean, I think the Smithsonian would be awesome to have a Falcon 9 or a Falcon Heavy booster. For sure, the Cape out in the Rocket Garden, to have an actual used rocket. Like, all the rockets out there at the Garden, even if they're flight hardware-ish, which most of them aren't, most of them are models, to actually have one that's performed its operation and come back, like, that's amazing, you know?
Isn't the one sitting outside of SpaceX in L.A. the first one that landed?
Yes.
And did they reuse that one, or they were just...
Nope.
So that was the first one,
the first one ever, they landed it, they kind of tore it apart and used it as, like, a... Let's dive into this thing, see how it held up.
They were basically like, this one goes on our fridge.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you want to know a fun fact about that one, by the way? I believe it's 154 feet tall. Sorry, and that's like 45-ish meters tall or whatever. But that's just above the FAA if you're near an airport. I believe 150 feet. You have to put a red light on it, you know, a blinking beacon. Uh-huh. Actually, I don't think it's near an airport. I think it's just 150 feet, period. You had to have a blinking red light on it. And Elon thought that was really gross and annoying and would look really dumb on top of their rocket. So what they did is they trenched out the ground 6 feet. So there's actually a ramp going down to the base of the Falcon Heavy or Falcon booster. Maybe it's, my numbers might be off a little bit, but that's the reason if you go up to it and you see it, it's actually like sunken down about 3 or 4 feet or something. Huh. Just so it just barely gets underneath.
I've been there a dozen times. I've never noticed it was sunken down.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And it's literally just so it doesn't have to have a red light on it.
I love how too, there's like a gate right there where you could just walk in and go up to it. But it's like security, whatever, for SpaceX, obviously. But you're like, maybe we should move this gate. Maybe this isn't the best place for like a door coming in where literally tons of people come to take pictures in front of it.
Right.
Because you just see SpaceX people walking up, and it would not be hard to just like, I don't know, dress like you're going to SpaceX and just walk right behind them, you know?
Well, they had a security issue the other day, like, or not the other day, it was probably a year ago. That's the other day in my world, I guess, where they caught someone literally just walking in with a crowd of people at one of those gates, and they tightened up security then because they're like, oh, this is very
it's
especially because
too obvious.
And also, like, I think the funny thing about SpaceX employees is they're almost all just wearing, you know, shirts, like a t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah.
So they're totally, like, they're young, normal-looking people. They aren't, like, you know, they aren't, like, in crazy tuxedos or suits or anything, you know, like you might have at some of the more traditional,
maybe back in the day, aerospace companies. Joe, have you ever been out there?
No, I've never been.
So, Tim, you have. So the first Tesla supercharger, or one of the first ones, where they unveiled the supercharger, it has this big, giant, like pillar thing sticking
out. Monolith thing, yeah.
Yeah, that is right there as well, and that's public, so you can drive up to it, obviously, charge your car. But then when you want to go from that to, like, let's say Starbucks down on the corner, you walk through, again, a public road, which is, like, basically the alley between the Tesla Design Studio and SpaceX, and it's public. And so you're walking, and, you know, the doors are open, there's giant rockets being constructed, and you're just literally just hanging out, like, hey, what's up?
It's
secure and as secretive as, you know, or protect. As they have to be about their missions, it's a surprisingly easy place to get to and just kind of hang out nearby.
Well, and one of the funny things about that is that when I rented that Model 3 last year, I went to go charge there at, like, I don't know, 9 at night or something, pull up, and then I just kind of sat there on my phone next to, you know, outside of SpaceX. I went and just, like, sat there at, like, and looked at the rocket, just sitting on my phone hanging out. walk back, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes later, whatever it was. It was probably 20 minutes. That gate was locked.
Oh, like, to walk into the supercharger.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm locked out. So I had to walk down to, like, another, like, gate opening thing and be like, knock, hello? My car's in there? Oh, okay.
But yeah, whenever I take people through there, they're like, are we allowed to be here? Is this okay? Because there's just, like, you know, rocket parts, like, on loading dock things all just laying around.
It does not feel like you're supposed to be there.
Right.
I can't believe they still have it public. It probably shouldn't be.
Oh,
it should just be for SpaceX and Tesla employees, probably. But maybe it will be someday.
Yep.
Who knows?
So
yeah.
I have a
Falcon Heavy...
Go ahead.
So you can actually maybe I'll let you know when to buy a ticket. It'll still be a while, but before I have enough confidence to.
Do you have like a guide to coming to look at a rocket and the Cape? Because that would be
I do.
Helpful.
Yep, I've got a video. It's old, but I also have like an accompanying article for it too. Because sometimes it's just nice to see it on paper, you know, or your phone. But I do have like a best places to watch rocket launch from Florida.
Cool.
We'll link to that in the description, but my rule of thumb though is no matter what the day is, add 50% basically.
What do you mean?
So,
like if they say Wednesday,
if they say 6 weeks, or if they say 4 weeks, it means 6 weeks.
Okay.
If they say 4 months, 6 months, like that's a pretty good rule of thumb. And obviously, as you get closer, it, that gap kind of closes a little bit, but. I don't even like consider it legit until you're about 10 days out.
How hard is it to get a place to stay nearby?
Depending on the mission, like this, a Falcon Heavy will be a little bit, you know, a little bit busier. Especially if it ends up going like anywhere near, you know, if it's in like late March, early April, that's spring break time too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it might actually start to get pretty difficult. But at the same time, like a lot of people don't like very few people outside of the aerospace industry stay in Titusville, which is really close to Kennedy Space Center, but it's not on, like, the water. So people don't, you know, the tourists tend to not stay in Titusville as much. So it is normally easier to book a place in Titusville or some of the towns up north.
Yeah.
But Cocoa Beach area, like, that will get filled just by spring breakers, let alone...
And Disney World Falcon isn't too Heavy. Far away, right?
No, Disney World is straight up in, like, Kissimmee, which is basically Orlando.
Yeah.
So again, like, in less than an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So in Orlando, like, there's tons of... places to stay in Orlando, at least. So.
Yeah, and that's what, 20, 30 minutes away, an hour away, maybe?
Yeah, you'll have no problem, really.
Yeah. Cool.
Or you shouldn't, but spring break could make it a little harder, so.
Just camp in the Tesla. It's all good.
Seriously, do it. Rent one.
Joe, have you ever been to a rocket launch? Have you ever seen one?
I haven't. I'm going to have to go do that.
Dude,
come to Falcon Heavy.
Let's do it. Let's host a night at a bar where it's like a live version of the show.
Ooh.
Or maybe not a bar, maybe fun. A coffee shop or something. Whatever, I don't know.
That'd be super fun.
Or let's ask the audience: would you like to see us all in the same room together?
Click here.
Yeah, guaranteed. The
is
audio
that too much
and
nerdery
would be
in
terrible,
one place.
So. Oh, that'd be bad, but it'd also be fun. I would definitely consider it. I'll be out at the Cape, I think, a lot this year. Like I said, there's so many things going on. I might as well just like buy a trailer out there or something. Like buy a little,
get a timeshare.
Yeah, timeshare or like a mobile home.
Manufactured home.
Yeah, a little tiny home.
Tiny home.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, so what are you guys working on, though, these days on your time?
I don't know. But tomorrow. Tomorrow. Friday.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's Friday.
Uh-huh.
Is today Friday?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm posting my 1 year cost breakdown of owning a Model 3.
Ooh.
So it's pretty straightforward, not super, you know, wild or anything, but literally just what every dollar I've spent on the car, why, and all that kind of stuff. And and look for some updated graphics because I'm working on some fancy new stuff here. So more to come.
Well, it's interesting that we're a year out now. You can actually look at a 1 year breakdown of the cost. Like, it's not theoretical anymore. You can actually, like, look at it.
Exactly. That's exactly why I wanted to do it, because I think, you know, when you first look at it, or when you just have, like, your basic, I put it down on paper, it's just not the same as, like, okay, here's an actual year has passed. Let's go have a look at it, right? And this is actually a year and a month now, because we got it mid-January, so, or a year and a month and a half or something. So,
yeah. That's cool.
What about you guys?
Joe, you're like, you stayed up all night scripting and stuff, or literally pulled all night, or what are you working on?
I did. Well, before I get to that, just kind of tailing on the Tesla thing, just real quick. I hope you guys don't mind. I would like to put this out to our audience because I'm curious about this. I did this on my second channel yesterday. And it was basically, I was thinking about, like, you know, we all get the comments from our videos all the time, all the different little zombie myths and about EVs and whatnot. And the one that I was in my car and I was like, I'm going to talk about this. So I did a little video on my phone. And it was basically the one about people that say, I'm not going to get an EV until I can charge it up in 5 minutes. You know, I have to be able to charge up in 5 minutes or it's just not worth it. And now that I've had it for a few months and I've taken a couple of longer trips with it, I've come to realize it's just not that big a deal. It's not the issue people think it is. Mm-hmm. That's my experience. And so I put that out there to my audience on that second channel. It was like, basically, I want to know, well, here was where I was going with that, is that the only people that I ever hear saying that this is a problem are people who don't have EVs. I've never heard anybody with an EV say, oh, yeah, the charging just takes so long and it's such a drag and everything. And so I put that out to my audience. I was like, I really want to know, are there any people who have bought an EV that have found that the length of time it takes to charge is a major impediment? Mm-hmm. So I put that out there and I got some interesting responses. The only one that I really got that went along with that statement was somebody that he said, I don't know where he said he lived, but he said he lived on an island that was only 12 miles wide. And and he had like a 100-mile leaf, so it worked perfect for him until he moved to a rural area in the continental U.S. and it just didn't work for him anymore. So he wound up going with an ICE car. He got a Mini Cooper or something like that. So mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well that's a pretty specific situation there, yeah. You know. But I just kind of wanted to put that out there because I'm actually very curious. I know I'm super biased about it, but I want to know is that really a situation that affects people? My experience is that it doesn't. But anyway, I would love to hear what the viewers and listeners of this channel.
I definitely think before you own one, your only experience with charging is filling up gas, and you have to fill up gas at a gas station. So you equate right. Like it takes me about 4 minutes to fill up on gas. I'm not going to sit at a gas station for 40 minutes. And then you don't, like, it doesn't click up here that you don't have to go to a gas station anymore. You have one in your garage now. Like, it just doesn't equate, I don't think, until you actually own it. Then you realize, oh, this is definitely a non-issue. Unless you're road tripping,
When you are on a road trip and you have to charge, it's not like you're just sitting there waiting for your car to finish. You're eating something or you're,
so, you know. So I'll give you the one case I've heard, the counter to that, which I think does make sense where it sucks. And that is if you don't have a place to charge at home, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
So what happens then is for a person, you know, he messaged me this exact thing, but in general, the idea is like if you don't have a place to charge at home with a 300 plus mile range car like a Model 3, you, depending on how far you commute, you might not have to charge all week, right? Like we don't charge our Model 3 every night. It literally will go days before we actually have to plug it in. And so in that scenario, what this guy ended up doing and what you would just generally need to do is to go charge once a week. And in order to do that, you're going to spend an hour or so doing so, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be something that is just 10 minutes. And so for him, he said, yes, it is way less convenient for me. You know, so that is the one case where he didn't have a place to charge at home or at work or any other kind of convenient locations he goes. So he had to go charge for an hour or so each week, which is obviously less convenient than gas. So I think you're right. On a road trip, you don't actually notice it that much because you're already going to stop and it actually feels good to spend 20, 30 minutes just kind of bouncing around or whatever. And if you have a place to charge at home, you're 100% right. Like you'll it's actually more convenient. But when you don't have that, I think is the only time where it kind of sucks. So
yeah.
I think there is a case, that in the video. But it's not a strong case, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's we're still not quite yet where, you know, anybody can charge anywhere they want to go at the grocery store or at work or at any parking garage, you know, but I think we'll get there. But but right now it's just, if you live and you have to park on the street, it's not convenient. And I made that point too. And then somebody in the comments made a very good point, which is that like people who buy an EV are people who have looked at their situation and say, yes, this will work for me. So of course it's not going to be a problem for them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, that's a good point to make. But,
well, so, anyway. Yes and no. Like, I have a lot of friends in New York that own Teslas, and they have to pay, you know, $300 to park it in a garage that doesn't have a charger, and they still bought them, you know? Mm. It's one of those things, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're also on a different level than all of us. Joe, what video are you working on, though?
Yeah, that was a big distraction from that question.
Tangent there.
Yeah, well, sorry, bring it up because it was an interesting... There were some interesting conversations going in the comments of my videos, so I thought I would bring it over here. No, Monday's video is on autonomous cars. And I don't want to spoil the joke too much, but I call myself Jostradamus. I'm going to make some predictions.
Yes. I love all the characters. We're going to have to do a compilation of all Joe's characters each year.
It's not really a character. I just call myself Jostradamus.
Well, but like your fact checker and the multiplicity thing and.
Yeah. That's what you do when you don't have other people to talk to. You just have to create your... I'm schizophrenic. Or
this is actually... I think we should finally tell people that this actually is... We brand this as a podcast, but Joe actually pays us as therapists for him because he doesn't have anyone else to talk to.
This is the one conversation I have with human beings a week.
By the way, Joe's wife is deaf and mute.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I keep her in a box. That got weird. Let's blame the lack of sleep. Anyway, but that's what the video is about. I'm looking at autonomous cars and how it's going to change the transportation landscape kind of thing.
Cool. I don't know exactly what I'm working on right now because, I want to do the commercial crew one soon, comparing like Boeing and SpaceX to Soyuz capsule as well. So any ride to the International Space Station, that's... I want to drop that maybe a little bit closer to DM1 as the hype train kind of is higher, maybe a little bit. So I might do, I kind of have a blank slate right now. It looks like my audience kind of wants me to do my biggest face palms of spaceflight history, which is like a compilation of like the situations where you're like, oh my, duh, you know, come on, guys. You know, just
like
always hindsight.
Folding over.
Yeah, exactly. Very hindsight bias video, and I'm gonna have to definitely point that out. Like, guys, I'm not like trying to make fun of things, but in hindsight, duh, you know, it's really frustrating sometimes some of these. But I'm excited for that one. That one's been in the pipe for 8 months because I did the biggest booms of spaceflight history last year and was gonna follow up with like all these other like face palms and all these other things and haven't got around to it because that's just the way I am. Because I still have to do, like, canceled part 3 and 4 and 5.
You still have to get over a cold, so there's that.
Have to get over a cold. I have a lot of stuff to do, guys. I got a lot of stuff to do. On top of all these launches coming.
Yeah, that's going to put a crimp in your schedule.
Ooh. Yeah, it's going to be hard for me. It's going to be crazy. Busy. Busy, busy, busy. Well, episode 19 in the bag. Is that right?
19.
Boom. Got it.
Here comes teenager.
Here comes 20. Well, as always, thanks, guys, for...
and it's 2019.
episode 2019-19. But yeah, thanks, guys. Let us know, of course, each week. Reach out to us, hashtag why don't they just. We looked through that this week to find our favorite why don't they just. Thanks for all your good input. Continue to be adamant if you have one that we haven't talked about yet. I keep seeing ones about the fairings, and I've seen... people say my 4-drone idea. We've already talked about that quite a bit. So if your why don't they just is the idea of why don't they just use 4 drones for Mr. Stevens, too bad, we've already talked about it. Go back to, like, I don't know, 15, 16. But let us know your other why don't they just and tell your friends about it.
Thanks
our
for
show.
Sharing those, guys.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. I just pulled it up right now. I don't get many notifications or people just don't like me on Twitter. So, but when I go search for it, it's very exciting.
Yeah. Well, is that that's gonna do it on
it.
Our see,
we'll see you
in our
ludicrous future. We bid you adieu.